Welcome to the Continued Silence with me, Emma Jane Taylor, on UK Health Radio. The Continued Silence is focused on the very uncomfortable conversations of child sexual abuse and the importance of talking openly about this subject to try and normalise the conversation. Child sexual abuse is real. It affects millions of people, young and old, across the world. The work we do is very much engaging more lateral thought processes on this terrible crime, which will inevitably support survivors, protect children, and help those not wanting to listen to listen. Joining me each show is my resident panel. This week it's activist Chris Tuck and myself who are with you, and with our guest Rochelle Blake. Rochelle is here to talk about disclosure and how we can support people through disclosure, because the more insights that we can share on this crippling conversation, the more important messages we can get out. So Rochelle, Chris, welcome today. Great to have you both with me. Rochelle, you were abused as a child. You were 9 years old. I know that you were believed, but let's just sort of hear a bit about your story, because you kind of obviously use that to do the work that you do today. And I think it's just a really good introduction to you. So welcome to the show, Rochelle.
Thank you. Really, really nice to be here. So my story starts with me from around the age of 5 years old. My mum started a new relationship with someone who wasn't my father. And it was very strange for me because it's always been myself and my mum and my extended family. So we actually moved out of my extended family home. My mum was quite young when she had me. She was 20. And I always had her all to myself. We were very, very close as an only child. And she started this relationship, and I remember it was very strange for me at first. And looking back now, I can kind of see, I think children always have a sixth sense. I always felt a very strange and strained energy in the house, never felt comfortable. And of course it was strange because my mum had a new partner. And that kind of carried on throughout the years. My mum had my brother when I was 7 years old, so then I was no longer an only child. And that was amazing. As time went on, there were arguments, and my mum was actually a victim of domestic violence. So that really characterised the home environment, of the stress and the strain. And I think I often look back at my experiences and think, wow, I was sexually abused at age 9. But when I look back, I can see that the environment and the tone and the abuse and all of those kind of things started from age 5. And I was actually younger than what I actually thought at the time, and the impact that that had on me building up to the sexual abuse that I actually experienced. So at age 9, I disclosed the abuse that I was going through in to a teacher at a faith community. It's actually a church that I attended that my family went to. I had a great relationship with her and her husband, and I kind of shared. I had been sharing along the way, along the months and the years, that my mum was actually a victim of domestic violence, and I was always believed. I was always listened to. Her husband was actually a social worker, and I knew what a social worker was at the time. So I actually felt quite comfortable and had great relationship with them to be able to actually disclose what was happening to them. And also my family leading up to that, there were times where I'd speak to them about the home environment, and I saw them every week. So they were aware of things and tried their best to support me. But of course, because my mum was also a victim, looking back now, I know that she didn't feel that she could speak out to my family and kind of say what was going on at the time. So all of that abuse for so long just led to it being a ripe environment for that to be taken further.
Thanks, Rochelle. Sharing your story, it's always going to be difficult. I understand that, but I appreciate that you do this because you know how important it is with the work that you're doing now as a prevention worker in early years. So what was it then that made you sort of think, actually, as you've gone on into your professional career, What did you really sort of feel that you wanted to take forward to close that gap and help other people with the work that you're doing today?
I think for me, just going, when I disclosed, I was believed. And that was always something that I had. And that was such a gift to me, to be believed, to be listened to, for people to hold space for me. That was really the making of me. You know, when I look back, the abuse was the breaking of me. But that growing up in that supportive community and having lots of people who knew what I had experienced, and there was shame that I carried with that. But I was always reassured that I was believed and that it wasn't my fault. And I think just having that support really, really built me and supported me on my healing journey. And having that, I knew that was something that I wanted to be able to give to others, you know, for others to feel that they were believed and that they are believed, to be held, for space to be held for them. I think is just so crucial in the healing journey for a child, even for an adult disclosing. And that's just something that I wanted to be able to give to the community that I work in and those that I'm serving with.
And so this was maybe 30 years ago that you disclosed. And here we are in 2024, having a conversation with someone 30 years ago, and you were believed, it was a support for you, and it was part of your healing process. And I think those sort of words just need to be absorbed, really, that you were believed, you were supported, and this formed your healing. And I think anyone listening now will be thinking how powerful what you've just said is, maybe to their journey, because we know survivors of child sexual abuse go through all sorts of emotion, trauma, physically, mentally, and emotionally. Not often given that space that you were given. You say openly, you've written about it when you wrote to us, that, you know, you hold, having space, having a safe space to hold these conversations has been really important for you. And so I want to first of all thank you for doing what you do today, because there will be lots of people, I'm sure, thinking, yes, this is what we need. This is what we need. We need to be believed. We need to be supported, because that could form our healing journey. You talk about being a huge advocate for therapy. I am. And I know Chris is. Obviously, Denny isn't here today, but therapy was something I wasn't a champion of in my 20s. But as someone in their 50s, I absolutely think it's such an important part of life, regardless of what you've gone through. Actually, I think therapy is something that every human being should invest in, because it's not straightforward life. It's not straightforward, the world that we're living in. The older I get, the more cynical I get as well, and the more I see the difficulties in every layer of society today. And so therapy is really important. There are some good people out there, and thankfully they were wrapped around you, Rochelle, and here we are with you now doing great work for the future of this conversation. Okay, let's introduce Chris to the show. Chris is no stranger to the panel here, an activist, works very hard in this space, doing all she can, and I suspect she's on a course today, just popping in her lunch hour to come and see us. Chris, great to have you with me. What a powerful introduction.
100%, EJ. I am baffled by what Rochelle's just shared with us, because that is not the norm. We would love it to be the norm for everybody. But in my household, there was disbelief. There was further abuse because of disclosure. And even speaking up to all the different statutory services like the police, social care, and school also led for them to not believe accounts of abuse going on in our home. And then that further silenced us. So the fact that Rochelle can sit there and say that she was believed, she was given space, and she's now feeding that back into her work in the early years prevention is absolutely 100% fantastic, because that is what every child and young person needs in their recovery.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, totally 100% support what Chris is saying. And I think, that's why I wanted just to pause at that moment, because we're talking 30 years ago that that happened. And it just is it's almost a language that no one understood 30 years ago. And sadly, I still think it's a language today that isn't really understood. So the fact that you were, I think, is, it's a huge thing for survivors to hear. And I suspect there'll have been a few others who might have felt that they were heard, believed, and supported. But that's a minority, and it shouldn't be a minority. I personally believe child sexual abuse is the greatest issue of this world that we live in today. And it's an issue that needs to be believed, supported, and heard, because it forms some of the biggest problems across society, across the world, that we are facing today. Because unresolved trauma, and I'm going to digress for a little bit, unresolved trauma leads to paths for many that were probably not the path they would have taken had they not been abused as children. There is a few of us, myself, Chris, you, Rochelle, and everybody who comes on the show here, who have found their way through to be here campaigning. But we need that to be more. But of course, it becomes more when we can cut through to the areas that we need to, from a leadership point of view, into the political world, to make a change. And so this disclosure, this belief, this support, this being heard and healed is really important. And of course, you were 9 years old. So just talk us through the journey of healing for you, Rochelle, because I think I'd be really interested. I was nine. I didn't have that healing and that support or that belief, nor did Chris. Mine started in my 20s. I often wonder what would have happened if I had been, or maybe I didn't actually talk about it, but actually, if I had spoken about it or someone had seen and helped me, I often wonder what would that journey have looked like. So I'd be really interested to hear what happened for you, Rochelle.
Yay. I'm so sorry, EJ and Chris, to hear that you weren't believed. I mean, I think I always say it almost feels like there's a golden thread that weaves us together as survivors, even though our stories are different. As we speak and we share experiences, we really feel it because we know, it takes someone who feels it to know it. So I'm so heartbroken that that was your experience. My healing journey what has been a very, very difficult one. I think growing up, I think especially in a faith community, I was always given hope. That was really important to me, and I think that laid a foundation for me to actually keep going in those seasons where it was extremely rough. I think going through my childhood, being nine, I moved schools after I disclosed what was happening. We moved house. My mum said, she couldn't bear to stay in the same house, and I'd moved house a couple times before then, so it was a huge upheaval. When my case actually went to court, it happened over the time that I was in year six. So I missed my year six SATs, and I found that the subjects that I was weakest at suffered the most. So I suffered educationally. There's a lot of stress and a lot of anxiety. I had a male teacher in year six, and that was uncomfortable. My mum had to, disclose to the school and to my teacher what happened, and slowly over time I began to build trust with that teacher, and had confidence in him, and he supported me. I think it was just at school, it was a kind of a situation where I felt like I was just so different from the other students. I think when I actually disclosed my abuse, the school that I was actually at, I had told one of my friends before I had moved, who had told some of the other children. And I remember going into the bathroom, locking myself in the bathroom, and crying and sobbing. because I just thought, well, now everybody knows. And it was just so heavy. You know, in those early days, it was extremely difficult. I was taken to a centre where I went and was videoed and shared all of those things. Sadly, for court evidence, I had to have a physical examination. So it's some of those really hard memories that in those early days stuck with me. I was encouraged by the police, if any memories come back, to write them down. That actually formed the foundation of my journaling kind of relationship. And that's how one of the modalities that I use to heal throughout my years has been to journal. So I've been keeping a journal since I was 10 years old. And to today, it's something that I use a lot. I write all the time. And that's one of my biggest gifts and one of my biggest tools to really help me. I was allocated a social worker, started counselling, had an amazing counsellor who held space for me beautifully. She was amazing and just very reassuring. And I think in those early days, I just remember sobbing through my sessions. As I got and I went to secondary school at age 11, that was again another big, huge milestone because I was now going to have to take myself to school. And it was the anxiety of having to go to school on the school bus by myself and being terrified and, you know, having memories and feeling scared to go out by myself. It's all of those normal challenges that a child would have, but having that, you know, with the abuse was quite difficult because it was trying to build my confidence and anxiety, all of my anxieties at the same time wrapped up and knowing that I couldn't really share that with my other classmates and my friends. So it was really, really challenging, really challenging. I was encouraged to go to girls' survivor groups, and I did that, which was also quite difficult, but it was also healing at the same time. And an art therapist ran that, and just to be with, I had never had an opportunity before, I think I was about 11, to be with other girls who had had the same experiences. And we didn't always really share very much of our individual stories, but we all knew that we'd had the same experience. So it's those kind of things that really, really did support me.
I'm gonna hand you over to Chris now because she's got something to say, and then we're gonna take a short break.
So I just wanted to acknowledge that it just robbed your childhood. You just shared with us exactly what happened to myself and probably EJ as well, and happens to a lot of children and young people. When you've gone through sexual abuse, it robs you of your childhood, your adulthood, if it's let to be. But if you have those interventions, and the earlier they are, the more you're going to make a better recovery and the potential to fulfill everything that you should have had out of life before you was abused. So thank you for sharing that, because I think that's quite clear for everybody listening, the impact it has on a child and young person.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Michelle. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this short break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, welcome back to today's show. We've been speaking to Rochelle and Chris and myself. We're talking about supporting disclosure. Just before the break, I'd asked Rochelle if she could maybe share with us how her healing journey went throughout her young life from being 9 years old to an adult. And she was sharing her early years memory. And at some points, I wondered if we were speaking in the same language or from the same country. And because I hear so often that police don't encourage victims of child sexual abuse to write and journal, when you said that, it made me think, I'm sure there's lots of people in professional roles in the police who are asking children to write and journal, and that's a great thing. But there's lots of activity in support for survivors that isn't being considered. I know a survivor who was looked after by the police, and she said it just felt like a whole dream. And he said, well, it probably was, actually. And she got thrown out of the police station that day, as brutal as that. And it then made her fear going forward. Now, what you say here is great, and I'm so sure there's lots of people in the police and support services who are supporting. Again, it goes back to disclosure and having the right conversations. You were supported. You've been encouraged by the authorities to write, to journal. But I just haven't often heard that. And I think it's great that you have said that, because it helps turn some of the conversations around for survivors who haven't had those experiences, that it did happen and it has happened. And we're talking 30 years ago. So, you know, I think, again, it's really important to have these conversations. Then you started sort of sharing information that made me think, gosh, I was nine when the abuse first happened. It wasn't actually about me not being believed. I never told anybody until much later on in my life. So it wasn't a case of not being believed. It was a case that I didn't feel confident, or I didn't have someone who I could talk to who could help me. But you then talk about you had a social worker, you were given space. You then had a survivor group, children of your age, and that made me feel really sad that you were with friends or girls of your age 11 in support groups. But it also was good to know that you do have them. I don't know if those support groups for that age group are still in existence. Chris might know. It seems like I had none of that. My therapy started later, when I maybe my brain was in a different place to be able to manage it. But I wonder what would have happened if I had gone through that at 9 years old, because that seems quite traumatic on the re-traumatizing as well. So I think it's really great that you were supported. It's always going to open up conversations, isn't it, for all of us, because we're all on a different journey. But it's sort of quite interesting to sort of have that spin and take now that you had got such support and you were so well looked after, but also you struggled to speak to your friends at school. You could speak to your friends in the support group, because I guess that's that shame and fear and embarrassment still are wrapped around you. Chris, I found that whole conversation that you had, that you shared with us, Rochelle, just very thought-provoking, actually, in so many ways. Chris, just be interested to hear your thoughts.
I was abused at the age of nine as well. But when I went to the police station, I had to have that internal examination like you did, Rochelle. And for me, that act was worse than the abuse that I had endured in my own case. That has stayed with me for a lifetime. And then the police, it was no further action, but also the whole conversation of me being abused and going to the police station was dropped within the household as well. So it was almost like it was a figment of my imagination, yet I was living with the day in, day out stuff like you at school, but I never had any of that support either. So it's really telling, isn't it, when you get the right support and interventions, how it can really help and transform your journey. And when you don't, the impact, as you have shared, can hit you like 30 years down the line, because that impact I've only just dealt with myself later on in life in therapy. And my therapy didn't start for me until I was 28 and I had a breakdown after my first child. So I had no therapy for those first 28 years of my life. So when we get it right, we can really make a difference. That's what I've picked up from you, Rochelle, from your whole conversation with us today so far. When we get it right, we can make such a difference.
Yeah, and I think getting it right is really important, because like you, Chris, I did sort of think, God, to have a physical examination after you've gone through such trauma, that to me isn't getting it right. And what are the better ways that the police could do this? And again, engage conversations. And these, I hope police are listening, right? Because I hear all sorts of conversations, good, bad, and indifferent on these conversations from survivors who've been through the legal cases as children. You know, if we were to go, right, what's the perfect following disclosure? What is the perfect procedure for a child? What would that look like? Personally, let's not give them a thorough examination after so much trauma. What could we do, Rochelle? Chris, let's have a think about this. What could we do? What could be the perfect sort of steps after a child has disclosed? Rochelle, I'm going to come to you first.
Again, it's just so heartbreaking to hear, Chris, your experience, because we go through so much as survivors trying to deal with that and navigate going through childhood and puberty. It's such a soul wound, and I can't imagine having to have gone through everything that I've gone through, not be believed, and not have space held for me after that. The physical examination part was something that has stayed with me all of my life and gave me fear, great fear, leading up to having my first child as well, Chris. So I understand exactly what you're talking about with that. It was agony. It was physically painful, but also it was the wounding. It's just a rewounding. A rewounding of something that you have not even begun to process. And it felt like I was being attacked again.
I look back now and
think, you know, my 9-year-old self should never have had to experience that. And I just think, you know, when it comes down to us relying on physical evidence to be able to substantiate something that a child is saying is happening, I think there's a problem. There's a big problem. Our voice alone should be enough
to support what we're saying that we're
experiencing for us to be able to have that help and have that support. We should not have it, you know, we shouldn't have to be inflicted and rewounded with that again.
And it's just, even now, it's
unfathomable for me.
We don't have a police presence on the show today, so I am unable to, obviously you two have gone through a police procedure where you were examined after. So I wouldn't, obviously we know why they're doing the examination. They need to get results. They need to get, conclusive reports done. But surely there is another way this can be done in a more gentle, sophisticated way for a child who has just gone through trauma. And I'm guessing there'll be lots of swabs done and internals to ascertain lots of information. It's actually making me feel just uncomfortable, actually, just even that we're having this conversation. And I guess that's a good thing, right? Because this is an uncomfortable part of that disclosure. And what happens next, Chris?
Yeah, I think things have moved on since 30 years ago or 35, 40 years ago. There's the sexual assault referral centres now where any evidence is collected and the environment is more child friendly or young person friendly. Back then when I went through mine, it was just within a room within friendly. It was just a horrible place. And for me, I told them that nothing could happen down there. They didn't believe me and they still went ahead. They said, we need to just check. But for me, and this might make him even more uncomfortable, they look to see if your hymen's broken, to see if there has been abuse, right? And when your hymen has not been broken, they use that to say that abuse has not occurred. I know for a fact now that hymens do not break. They stretch and they go back. So when the CPS are relying on examinations to show that a hymen's been broken to prove sexual abuse, it is just so unscientific. It's outrageous that they're allowed to use that to say or prove that sexual abuse hasn't taken place, because scientifically, and if you speak to different people, they know for a fact that the hymen stretches and goes back. So just because it's not broken doesn't prove sexual abuse has not taken place. So I wanted to really put that out there, because there are going to be people in that situation where they know abuse has taken place because it's happened to them, yet they're having professionals saying, oh, actually, the scientific evidence is not showing that, or the medical evidence is not showing that. So,
Chris, thank you for sharing that. So, you know, greater medical knowledge and is needed. And who is doing that work? I'm sure there's a whole load of people doing that work. I'd be really interested to have more conversations with people doing that work. Chris, I'm sure you do know people who are doing that work and researching. But maybe we need to start investigating these conversations, because that's a piece of knowledge that I think is really important. We get lots of nuggets of information that come through on this show, and that is, I think, a really important one. Just because your hymen hasn't broken doesn't mean sexual abuse hasn't occurred. Thank you very much for sharing that with us, Chris. Okay, so Rochelle, let's come back to you. So you've gone through, you know, a really traumatic childhood. You've turned your life around now as a parent and someone who is working in this space to help people on these conversations. How does your work, do you work with police at early stages of disclosure? How does it work for you?
So my role is actually as a prevention worker. I don't work directly with the police. So my role is supposed to be a low-level role, which is really signposting and working in the community. So referrals come through from nurseries and schools, not specifically around child sexual abuse, but just in general. It could be a mum who's suffering with postnatal depression, is quite isolated at home, and I would be allocated that case. I will go and sit with that mum and introduce myself and signpost to the services around, support that mum to access a group. It could be that I am asked to go and support a family who have an autistic child and have just had a diagnosis and they are wanting support to know what they can access. In the course of the conversations with families, it's amazing how much comes out about different experiences that families have. So although it is low level, and although I don't have any counselling qualifications, that is my role. I'm there to someone to empower, someone to encourage, someone to counsel. So I often work with, because my role is around 0 to 5 year olds, I'm often working with midwives, I'm working with GPs, I'm working with health visitors. So often, primarily, 95% of my work is with women.
And we know what the statistics are
in terms of women who are disclosing these things have happened to me, I'm a victim of sexual abuse, or disclosing, you know, a domestic violence that's happening within their relationship. So these are bodies that I would then refer on to. And if it got to a point of having police involved, normally that would be escalated higher than what I would be deemed suitable to support with. But these are conversations that are constantly happening. I facilitated a baby group, for example, and it was the mums who were the ones who would bring the babies to the group, sometimes supported by dads. And in that group, you know, there could be 12 women, and I've never had anyone disclose to me, but I know in those groups there would have been mothers who have experienced this. And there isn't always that space created for them to really share the kind of experiences that they've had. So yeah, it's something that is not directly with police, but I'm working within the community all the time and working with families where these things do come up and these conversations do come up.
Okay, so I want to rewind there and say your role is not low level, first of all. It is of high importance. And this low level conversation, whoever's saying it and using those words should wash their mouth out and look at the importance of what you are doing. Because it, in my opinion, what you're doing is offering something very special to bridge the gap and bridge the gap to anyone who's going through any kind of trauma. And it's coming from a heartfelt place because you have knowledge of trauma, you have an awareness, you have understanding, you have empathy. And I think people like you, Rochelle, should be seen as great importance to society. And I'm sure that there are a lot of you around who are being seen as low-level support, but you're really not. And it really pees me off that people consider that of people like yourself, Rochelle, good people working probably more over and above what you get paid to look after, to care, to signpost, to make sure no one's being left in the system. And so thank you, actually, for doing what you do. So many people will gain so much from you. And like you say, you come from a place of authenticity and compassion for all versions of ourselves, for us as victims, but also as those who can build the strength as a survivor, and in a hope that we can assess, that we can access to become all that we really desire. It is sharing our stories that we give permission for others to also speak out and begin their own healing journey. So I just wanted to take a moment really to say that, and I want you to try and drop those words low level when you're talking to anyone in public, because they're just, as soon as you said that, I think people who don't understand might not realize the importance of you. For us that understand, we would like you to drop low level. Well, I'm only talking personally here, but I think that you really are of high importance to society. And I am so grateful that you do that, because just helping one or two people or 10 people or 15 or whatever it is that you help every day is really key to society moving forward. So thank you for that. I'm going to take a short break, be back after this.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, before the break, we were talking about Rochelle's role in society. Chris was agreeing with me. However, I think we lost her a couple of times there, but she was agreeing that you do an incredible job, Rochelle, and we need more Rochelles. And I hope that today gives you more encouragement to keep going and also maybe look at maybe other opportunities. You know, maybe Rochelle, we need a team of Rochelles to get out there and do more work, because, you know, that would be a great, great support to society today. So, Rochelle, if anyone wanted to contact you, where would they go to find you?
Thank you for saying that. I appreciate that very much. If you want to find me, you can find me on Instagram. My tag is word_. So that's WORD_pharmacy, FARMACY. That's word pharmacy.
Thank you, Michelle. So what's next? What are you working on? Do you do any kind of courses, any speaking, any events? Is there anything that you're doing that people could come and sort of hear more about your work from?
So at the moment, I have a certificate as an antenatal health educator and a doula. So it's a passion of mine to really support families. And especially I want to really focus in on supporting families who have experience of childhood sexual abuse, because there isn't a lot of help out there. There isn't a lot of trauma-informed care. I also have been somebody who's experienced a lack of trauma-informed care in maternity services, and it's something I feel extremely passionate about, because you're extremely vulnerable when you are a woman who is pregnant. Partners often don't know how to support, so that's something that I'm working and building at the moment. I also am a speaker and an encourager, so I'm also available to do speaking, and I really do speak from my heart because it's something I'm so passionate about. Having space held is so important. In the work that I do, there isn't a lot of support. The groups that I run are not specific to sexual abuse, but we're talking about, women and families in the first year of life when they're very vulnerable, who don't have anywhere to go. They don't have anywhere they can access help. So for me, I see it as my mission to be able to build more spaces like that where families can access help as adults, because if that trauma and that healing is not able to take place, then when we're bringing children into the world, then we're not actually able to give them what they need, because we haven't been able to give ourselves what we need. So that's something that I'm working on.
Thank you, Michelle. And in the background, we've been looking at your Instagram. Can't find your word underscore pharmacy. What have we missed there?
It's Pharmacy pharmacy.
There you go. Pharmacy word, Pharmacy. We've found you now. Do go and follow Rochelle, and you will see all the wonderful things that she's doing there. If you want to follow Chris and keep up to date with all the wonderful things that Chris does, you will find her at Chris Tuck underscore WWHF. And you will also find activities for her charity, which is at SOB underscore org. SOB is Survivors of Abuse underscore org. And Chris is very active and doing lots of wonderful things. So please do support Chris. And if you're a survivor, you'll find lots of activities there that can help you from a physical aspect with the work that she's doing. Chris, great to have you with me today. We're just coming up for the last couple of minutes. And thank you for all you do. I know you're really busy at the moment, but where are you today?
I'm in Heathrow. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now,
Yes.
yes.
So we've got lots of planes going past. So I'm at the peer conference. So basically, speaking up on behalf of victim and survivors. But just going back to Rochelle and earlier, I said she was a conduit between the people that have been harmed and giving them back power and control over their lives by giving them choice, giving them information, and helping them and supporting them in their recovery. So we need loads of Rochelles everywhere. Really do. Thank you, Rochelle.
Thank you, Chris. Chris and I could be twins because she obviously didn't hear what I said earlier, and we obviously align very much on this conversation with the same thoughts towards you, Rochelle. Where I said Rochelle should go out and build a team, and we have more Rochelles around the world. Rochelle, thank you. We're coming up to the end of the show. It's been great to have you with us today. Thank you also, Chris, and for taking a break. I know you're at Heathrow, and it's a relief to hear that there are planes flying over because if they weren't, we might be a bit concerned by that. Look, we're trying to normalise difficult conversations here. It's not easy, but the more we engage, the more normal they become. Thank you to Chris, to Rochelle, to everyone behind the scenes, Christine, Johan. Because without them, this show wouldn't happen. I'll see you next time with Chris. My handle on Twitter is at EJTaylorUK. Everything you need to know about me is there, including my website, as is Chris's at ChrisTuck_WWHF. Keep going, Rochelle, and hopefully we'll catch up with you again another time.
Thank you. Take care.
Take care. Thank you.